Night Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, a great and historic day when the Senate impeachment trial is underway. So far, the big argument, not about whether President Trump is guilty or not guilty, not about whether he should be removed from office or not removed from office. It's an argument right now, and a bitter one, about how the trial is going to proceed. Are they going to be allowed to call witnesses, any witnesses, to subpoena additional documents? And the two sides have laid out their case, both, I think, fairly eloquently and emotionally. The Democrats made a disastrous decision to have Adam Schiff give the lead position on why they need witnesses and the ability to subpoena additional documents. Why is that disastrous? Because Adam Schiff is already tainted because of his long, long, long involvement pursuing Trump. He's sort of like Inspector Javert of Les Miserables. He's just going after his guy, and it's easy to write him off. The president's case was made by Pat Cipollone, who is the White House counsel, and by the president's lead personal attorney. No, not Rudy Giuliani. It's Jay Sekulow. They also made a case that had some problems with it. We will get to that in just a moment. I do think that there is a great deal going on. When they resume in the trial, if there's anything important or riveting or significant, we will go to it live. We will also be speaking later in the show with some fascinating and brilliant people. One of them is Glenn Beck. And Glenn, as I reconnected with after some years, he's something of an old friend. And we reconnected when I went out to Dallas to do a podcast about my book with him. He's going to come on and share reactions, his reactions, which I'm sure are very different from mine, to the impeachment trial so far. We're also going to be speaking to a reporter who President Trump just hours ago characterized as a stone-cold loser. And why? Because she is the co-author of the number one best-selling book in the world right now. It was just released today, and I'm pleased she's coming on this show. Yeah, the book is called A Very Stable Genius, and it's based upon 200 interviews, many of them, if not most of them, I believe, sourced. They give the names of the people that they interviewed, including people who are former members of the Trump cabinet, etc. And they talk about the operations of the Trump cabinet. It doesn't really include, because it covers the first 3 years that he was president, doesn't bring us right up to date with the impeachment crisis. But of course, when we talk to Carol Leonig, she will. We will be getting to that on the Medved show. The drama is real right now. And I think that the country is deeply divided. All of the polling shows, it's extraordinary. There are two major polls just out today. One shows that 52% of the people in the country think that President Trump should be removed from office. That's a CNN poll. And then there's another poll that says that 52% of the people in the country think President Trump should not be removed from office, that he should be acquitted in the Senate trial. Everybody knows, and acknowledges that he will not be removed from office, regardless of what the polling shows, regardless of the way people feel, regardless of what happens in the trial. There will not be 20 Republican senators who vote to remove a president of their own party. This is an impeachment that was designed to fail, because it could not possibly succeed. If they had wanted to succeed, the Democrats, in slapping President Trump or criticizing him or basically showing a weakness in the administration by going over this entire matter of his phone call with the president of Ukraine, they could have passed a resolution of censure. They probably also would have gotten some Republican support for it. But they didn't do that. And we are here. The question really becomes, where's the exit ramp? We were talking about that with the confrontation with Iran. There really was no direct exit ramp. That seems to be forgotten right now. And the president's over in Davos right now, meeting with world leaders. The economy overhangs everything, and overhanging all of that is the fact that we have Iowa caucuses in 13 days? Yeah, really, 13 days. And there is a brand new poll out of Iowa that just shows, again, the race being totally jumbled up with one surprise candidate rising dramatically and maybe even threatening to win the Iowa caucuses, which would be turning the world upside down. We will get to that as well. First of all, to set the mood, MSNBC has a dramatic impeachment promo. And they're not promoting impeachment so much as they're promoting, though, of course, they are. They're promoting the drama of the entire thing and the significance and the deep meaning. And, of course, it ends up sounding like a promo for a fictional film, which I guess there are some critics who would say it all is. Here's what it sounds like.
Donald Trump on trial. For only the third time in history, an American president impeached, charged with abuse of power and obstruction of Congress.
This thing is a big hoax. It's a big hoax.
He will remain a threat to national security and the Constitution if allowed to remain in office.
Today, the impeachment trial of Donald Trump.
Wow. Yeah, and again, today it is going on, but they're arguing about witnesses. By the way, am I sure that the Republican majority in the Senate will hold so that they do not allow witnesses? No, I'm not at all sure, because there is a great deal of talk that at some point, probably later in the proceeding, Mitt Romney, for instance, has been very specific. He's not going to vote for witnesses now. But after they've each presented 24 hours of arguments and they've had 16 hours of questions, and all of this is supposed to run till 1 in the morning. Yeah, that's 1 in the morning East Coast time. After all of that has gone on, Romney has said, okay, I'll be open to the idea of actually calling some witnesses. And there are other Republican senators, Lamar Alexander of Tennessee, who is leaving the U.S. Senate, Susan Collins of Maine, who has a very tough reelection fight coming up in a state that is going increasingly in the wrong direction, the Democratic direction, Cory Gardner of Colorado, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. There could easily be enough Republican senators who go for the decision to actually call additional witnesses. Andy McCarthy, who is excellent, was on Fox News just moments ago, and he made, I think, a brilliant point about how both sides were actually introducing contradictory arguments. This is part of what Andy McCarthy, former federal prosecutor, a longtime contributor to National Review, had to say.
The positions that the lawyers on the competing sides are taking and the way that their rhetoric, interestingly, at times undermines the position that they want to take. So, for example, Adam Schiff, on behalf of the House managers, makes the argument repeatedly that the case that the House made against the president is overwhelming. And he does that in the context of trying to make an argument that they need evidence and witnesses. They called the evidence, he called the evidence that they're, the new evidence that they're asking for at various times, vital and crucial. He referred to the witnesses as key witnesses. Of course, it's not possible if the evidence is already overwhelming and the case is already overwhelming that they could have made an overwhelming case without substantial evidence that was vital and key and crucial. So I think his rhetoric is running into his position. At the same time, on the president's side, the president, while I think the president's lawyers quite rightly are emphasizing the constitutional infirmity of the two charges, the president wants to contest the facts of the case. And some of that has seeped into the rhetoric of his lawyers. The problem I think he has with that, and this is something I think they'll have to be concerned resonates with these moderate Republican senators, is if the president is taking the position that the facts need to be contested, that whether there was a quid pro quo and whether he did anything wrong needs to be contested, that actually supports the argument for why you should hear from witnesses who haven't been heard from yet and who may have things to say that are relevant on those different subjects. Now, they can make the argument that the House should have called those witnesses or made a better effort to get them, but the fact is that the rhetoric of contesting the facts is supporting the argument of the people who say that more witnesses are necessary.
Yeah.
Okay. Andy, what about the Schiff argument about fairness? We covered that committee hearing. Obviously, it was exactly opposite, as Republicans were saying his operation was not fair at all.
Yeah, it's interesting, Brett. You know, I think perhaps the unforced error that Senator McConnell made was not allowing the record in the House to be brought in toto into the Senate, which would normally be a kind of a pro forma thing. But it was clearly done for the reason of trying to highlight the what they perceive as the unfairness, and I think with good reason, the unfairness of the House proceedings. I really thought that they could have made that point without leaving themselves vulnerable to claims and complaints about not bringing the whole record in. Lawyers always talk about the difference in a trial between the weight and the admissibility of evidence. And what that really means is you can let evidence come in, even evidence that the underlying authenticity of which or the procedures supporting which are a little bit shaky, and make the argument that that evidence should not be accorded great weight because of the way it was collected or because of other attendant circumstances about it. I think he should have probably just allowed all that stuff to come in and let the lawyers make the argument that the House proceedings were unfair.
Andy is right on all points here. And particularly the last point that he's making. Look, why are they doing this whole impeachment right now? For both sides. And in other words, why is it that Mitch McConnell is not simply entertaining Josh Hawley's desire to move to dismiss right away? So they don't even get into this and the lengthy arguments about the proceedings that are going to be coming up. And the answer is because they don't have the votes, because there would be at least four Republicans who would vote against instant dismissal. In other words, people who believe that, wait, this may not rise to the level of impeachment, but it's close enough, it's serious enough, it is at least questionable enough that we have to look like we are open and reviewing it. Part of the problem is if the leading argument, particularly this was emphasized by Jay Sekulow when he was speaking for the president, and he reviewed all of the complaints that the president and his defenders have had all along about the House proceedings. I think the House proceedings were unfair. I think it was stacked against the Republican side. And the witnesses that they called and that they were not allowed to call, all of that was very dubious. The Democrats control the House and they control the proceedings, and it was unfair. So what you have right now is the Democrats leading without Adam Schiff, who gave a very long and very detailed assault at the beginning, claiming, wait a minute, your procedure isn't fair in the Senate side. You are not allowing us to call witnesses. You're not allowing us to do this. You're not allowing us to do that. And then Jay Sekulow answers back. In effect, he says, oh, yeah, you think we're unfair? You were unfair. No, you're the puppet. You're the puppet. The point is, it all sounds pathetic. And frankly, I don't think either side is going to persuade the public with this. It's both sides arguing with the refs, basically. They're not playing the game. They're not advancing the issue. And I think at one point, I do believe the president's defenders, who are mostly, obviously, very skilled lawyers, with the likes of Ken Starr and Robert Ray and Pam Bondi and of course, Alan Dershowitz. Alan Dershowitz has been very specific. The president to beat impeachment doesn't have to prove somehow that it's a perfect phone call. If you are trying to prove that it's a perfect phone call, that this is the greatest president we've ever had, that he's completely innocent, that he is a poor, persecuted victim of some kind of evil conspiracy. If that's your goal, then it's going to be very tough to say no to witnesses, because then you're disputing the facts. And if you're disputing the facts, how do you not call witnesses? If on the other side you are saying, as Adam Schiff is saying, the evidence is overwhelming, there is no contesting all the evidence we have, then what do you need witnesses for? You already have an overwhelming case. Both sides undermined, both sides not looking particularly good. I think there is some curiosity just on a human perspective about what John Bolton would say and other people who are associated with White House. Bolton, because he's been fired since this happened. He also has a big new book coming out, which is always a factor. Will we hear from John Bolton in all of this? The president has indicated that he would make additional claims of executive privilege and try to prevent Bolton from testifying before the Senate, even if he were subpoenaed. And what all of this does is, I think it causes public interest to plummet, and rightly so, because I honestly do not believe there is any real doubt about how the president handled this entire matter of the interaction with President Zelensky in Ukraine. There isn't any real doubt of the facts of the case. And that would also lead to the Republican argument, which is, we don't need witnesses. We need to get this over with. Why are Republicans so eager to get it over with? Because, first of all, it's dragged on far too long anyway. This has actually characterized all of President Trump's first term. It hasn't punished him. He actually has a higher approval rating now in the midst of impeachment. Now, it's not as high as Bill Clinton's was when he was in the midst of impeachment, but it isn't hurting Trump. And right now, if you compare where Trump was in the third year of his presidency, most other people who did as well as Trump in the third years of their presidency ended up winning re-election. People like Bill Clinton, people like Barack Obama, people like George W. Bush, Jimmy Carter, who did significantly worse than President Trump in his third year, ended up, of course, being a big loser. The question with the witnesses is, what is it exactly that the Democrats want to find out or will find out? Or are they just on a fishing expedition to try to hope that something else dramatic will break, like the Lev Parnas allegation that there was some kind of tail that was placed on Marie Yovanovitch, the American ambassador to Ukraine, who the Trump administration clearly disliked? What the Trump administration should have done is, rather than trying to discredit Ambassador Yovanovitch, just say, look, we want to go in a different direction. Somebody else is hired. He can do that. He's president of the United States. We will get to this question about the questions. There are a bunch of them that were prepared that by a former prosecutor that they would want to ask potential witnesses in the Senate trial. We'll also bring you the very latest and highlights and lowlights of the arguments on both sides. The thing moves forward. They could be going late tonight and then get around to the substantive arguments, not just about arguing about process, a little bit later this week, maybe on Thursday. We will be back on the Medved Show. We are going to be joined later in the show by Glenn Beck, who has strong feelings about everything, and I'm sure about this, and also by Carol Leonig, who is a co-author of the new book, A Very Stable Gene. And on the Michael Medved Show, the debate continues about the procedure for the Senate trial of President Trump. And it is extraordinary that they can't even agree on this. They were able to negotiate agreement on the Clinton impeachment, and they voted 100-0 to adopt those rules. There was some desire to just reincorporate those rules. but this issue of witnesses is separating people very directly. Why is it that Mitch McConnell seems so extraordinarily focused on trying to get this done within the next 2 weeks? Get it finished out of the way within the next 2 weeks. There are two reasons. The most important reason is simply to put it behind us, to get on to the election. Actually, I think the best line that was used by the Trump defenders, by Pat Cipollone, and he does say Cipollone, though Adam Schiff keeps calling him Cipollone. And but I mean, I heard the man pronounce his own name, and yes, he uses the E and sounds it. So, okay, that's settled. At least we can settle one thing about this dispute. But he had a very good line at the end of his presentation. He said, okay, let's get this done and move on to an election. In fact, if we can go to that line from a White House counsel, Pat Cipollone, I think it's effective and it summarizes the best approach the Republicans have right here. Here he is.
They want to remove the President Trump from the ballot. They won't tell you that. They don't have the guts to say it directly, but that's exactly what they're here to do. They're asking the Senate to attack one of the most sacred rights we have as Americans, the right to choose our president in an election year. It's never been done before. It shouldn't be done now. The reason it's never been done is because no one ever thought that it would be a good idea for our country, for our children, for our grandchildren, to try to remove a president from a ballot, to deny the American people the right to vote based on a fraudulent investigation conducted in secret with no rights. Well, I could go on and on. But my point is very simple. It's long past time that we start this so we can end this ridiculous charade and go have an election. Thank you very much, Mr. Chief Justice.
Okay, and go have an election. That's the best line. See, the point in characterizing the entire thing as a ridiculous charade, you don't have to do that. You don't have to win that argument. And especially not with people pronouncing how solemn this is and the grandeur of the Constitution. And it's beyond a ridiculous charade. It's serious right now. And the Senate is going to vote, and it's going to vote to sustain President Trump. But the problem, part of the problem with the White House strategy, and this was even more evident in some of Jay Sekulow's remarks, is that they are working for President Trump, who wants not only for the Senate to move on, for them to have their vote, for him to be sustained. And part of the reason the timing is so important is on February 4th, it's the day after the Iowa caucuses, the president's scheduled to give a State of the Union address. And President Clinton gave a State of the Union address in the middle of impeachment. Didn't even mention impeachment. He gave an actually very effective State of the Union address, and that helped his job approval just skyrocket. I think it is virtually would be impossible, no matter what his advisors tell him. If this impeachment trial is still going on when President Trump gets up there to give the State of the Union, he'll probably talk about it, even if he is told not to and he should be told not to, because there is so much good that you can talk about with the Trump story. Regarding the economy and regarding trade deals with China and the approval finally of the Mexico-Canada-America trade deal, the MCA agreement, it's all moving forward, and a lot is moving forward. And no, we did not plunge headlong into a major land war or aerial war even with Iran. That's a good thing. And I think the great desire on the part of the people who are working for the president is to get this done before the State of the Union so he can get up there and be vindicated and run a victory lap. And okay, that's understandable. But it may well be that it will be a more meaningful victory if you allow the witnesses to be called. And the best way that Republicans can avoid calling the witnesses is to avoid trying to assert that the entire process is a sham, that there was no reason for this. Play it out. And do make the point that virtually all of the questions that people have suggested that they want to ask additional witnesses like John Bolton and like Mick Mulvaney and like Mike Pompeo, that all of those questions have really pretty much already been answered. But if you contest the answers, then you can't use that argument. I referred yesterday to this piece by Barbara McQuaid, and Barbara McQuaid is a former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan. She is a professor of law at one of America's best law schools, University of Michigan Law School. She's also a member of the USA Today Board of Contributors, as I am. And she lists, for instance, the following questions she'd like to ask for Mick Mulvaney. You stated at a news conference in October that the military aid was absolutely held up to get Ukraine to investigate the Democratic National Committee server that was compromised during the 2016 election, and then later that day said the two things were not linked. Did someone suggest or direct that you walk back your first statement? If so, who? Now, he could either answer that question or say, I'm sorry, this is a matter of executive privilege. And or he could say no one suggested that I walk back that statement. It was suggested that I had been imprecise in what I said earlier. Then another question they want to ask. Did President Trump ever express a desire to block the House from conducting an effective investigation? Do you think that President Trump said, hey, Mick, I want to stop the House from doing an effective investigation? And I think it's very, very unlikely that it was ever that explicit. So he can answer in good conscience, no. But see, for all of these questions, there's nothing here that needs to be ferreted out. She also says we should ask Mr. Mulvaney, why did President Trump withhold witnesses and documents from House investigators? And the obvious answer, and you know what the answer is going to be, it's because he wanted to protect the executive privilege, which has been part of presidential tradition. And he is fighting to protect future presidents. And then she goes on to write, a trial featuring these witnesses and others could change the course of history or end with the Senate falling short of the 67 votes needed to convict Trump and remove him from office. Well, of course, it's going to fall short of that. At the very least, Americans would have more information and a deeper sense of what's at stake when they vote this fall on whether to reelect this president. I think Americans have some sense of what's at stake. And people are, in fact, bitterly, bitterly divided about it. And it is so partisan. That's one of the points that Gallup makes in a big release they have today about where President Trump stands at this point in his presidency. And they have a piece that says Trump third year sets new standard for party polarization. How do they know? Well, this is actually fascinating, and we will get to that and the very latest from the Senate floor, that and more, right here on The Medved Show. On The Michael Medved Show, talking about the country being divided and polarized, in addition to all of the new polling that shows that Americans are split pretty much right up the middle. People have strong feelings about impeachment, but we're divided about it. I'll tell you where people do not have strong feelings and in one side or another, particularly, is that there is polling. One of the things CNN poll shows, about 70% of Americans do think we should have witnesses in the trial. Is that because people are so fascinated to see what Michael Duffy is going to testify? Or John Bolton? Or Mick Mulvaney? Some of the people who are in favor of witnesses no doubt want Hunter Biden to testify. Okay, is that actually going to happen? We will see. It's very tough to predict because there are a number of senators, some on the Democratic side, who may end up voting with President Trump and for President Trump, particularly that's Doug Jones in Alabama, who's the most endangered Democrat trying to defend his Senate seat. And it's also people like Joe Manchin in West Virginia, where the president is enormously popular and almost sure to continue to wield influence and exert popularity in that state. The point about American divisions and polarization is they take a look at Gallup, at some of the history. And again, it's not history that begins with Trump. It's history that's been shaping up this way for a while. And they don't really give a reason why. I think I can give a reason why. Trump third year sets new standard for party polarization. And what they're talking about is they're looking at the average approval rating for a given president. And President Trump is not, President Trump is very much comparable to many of his predecessors in terms of his 43% average approval rating for this year. And well, actually, it's 42%. We'll get to that. But what is different for President Trump is that that approval rating is almost entirely based on partisanship. We've never had anything where people were as polarized on any other president as they are on Donald Trump. Among Republicans, 89% approve of the president. 89%. And okay, yes, he exaggerates about just well over 90% of Republicans. No, but 89% is pretty close, Mr. President. Congratulations. Among Democrats, it's only 7%. So there's an 82-point difference. And in the last year, despite all of the good economic news we had in 2019, President Trump got more popular among Republicans. He went from 87 to 89%, and even less popular among Democrats. He went from 8% to 7%. Only 7% of Democrats approve of what the president is doing. This is extraordinary. And one of the points that they make in the Gallup poll, and I think that's very important, is that all of the most recent presidents, going back to Bill Clinton, so if you go from Bill Clinton to George W. Bush to Barack Obama to Donald Trump, they are all the most polarizing presidents, and it's just getting worse. Before that, when you were dealing with like presidents like George Herbert Walker Bush, Ronald Reagan, even Jimmy Carter, it wasn't the same. You could find much higher numbers of Republicans who approved of Ronald Reagan, or even of Democrats who approved of Jimmy Carter, than you can now, because the parties were more varied. They were less ideological. And also because we didn't have partisan media in quite the same way on both sides. Now, I'm not saying that the media back in Reagan's day weren't disproportionately on the left. They were. And they were sniping at Reagan, even Eisenhower's day. Media were not kind to Eisenhower because he was a Republican. And media have been overwhelmingly Democratic, since the New Deal, since Franklin Roosevelt. It's been that way. But now you have media that don't even disguise it, where it's open, where the bias is undeniable, and you have media on both sides. So it drives away any Republican dissent that otherwise might exist in terms of supporting President Trump. At the same time that on the other side, they drive away any potential Democratic dissent that might give President Trump a chance. And you have this crazy polarization. The other thing that I think is fascinating is to look at the job approval rating, and they've compiled an average for his third year. President Trump's job approval rating is 42%. For Barack Obama, his third year, it was 44.5%. He went on one re-election. George W. Bush was much higher for his third year. It was 60%. And George Herbert Walker Bush was 70% for his third year. A year later, he got voted out of office. He actually got one of the lowest percentages of the popular vote of any Republican ever nominated. The only Republican who got a lower percentage of the vote than he did was William Howard Taft. That's, and in both cases, that's because there was a strong third-party candidate, Ross Perot with George Walker, Herbert Walker Bush, and Theodore Roosevelt with William Howard Taft. But the fascinating thing to me here is Reagan wasn't that much higher than Trump. And Reagan was just a year away from an election where he won 49 states and he won 60% of the vote. But according to Gallup's polling, and they have pretty good records of it, Reagan only got a 44.9% approval rating, which isn't that far off from Trump's 42%. So what does this mean for Trump's reelection? It means it's going to be a horse race. And I think everybody knows that. And people shouldn't pretend that Trump is a sure loser any more than they should pretend that he is a sure winner. There are lots of things that have yet to be decided. One of the things that's yet to be decided, obviously, that's rather important, is who the Democrats are going to put forward to run against Trump. There is increasing evidence, brand new poll from Iowa, that this is increasingly Joe Biden's race to lose. Could he still lose it 13 days away from Iowa? I think it's unlikely that he could lose Iowa, but Amy Klobuchar, yes, her, according to a brand new poll, is soaring, and soaring dramatically. Is that because of the New York Times sort of kind of maybe halfway endorsement? New York Times endorsed both Amy Klobuchar and Elizabeth Warren and said at the end of their long, long, long endorsement editorial, may the best woman win. Oh, yuck, yuck, yuck. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. If the New York Times can't make up its mind, the editorial board, then maybe it's not so surprising that voters in Iowa and around the country can't seem to make up their minds. We will talk about all of that with Glenn Beck, who always has passionate viewpoints. Certainly, he was very passionate when he was opposed to President Trump, as he was in during the election campaign, particularly in the nomination struggle. He was a strong supporter of Ted Cruz. But Glenn Beck has become a very strong supporter of the president. We will talk with him about impeachment and what it means and where we go from here. And also the possibility, and it is a possibility, and I'll tell you how, that Trump could be on the ballot in 2024. That and more in this greatest...